is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet. Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great, great show planned for you today. This entire show is dedicated to science for humans. It's all about us. During the first half hour, I'll be joined by my co-host, Dr. Jeff Gallini, to talk about, does fear hinder athletic performance? And if so, what can you do about it? Then we're going to change the topic. You hear a lot about amyloid protein in the discussion of the development of Alzheimer's disease. Did you also know that this amyloid protein affects your heart? And now there's a way to detect amyloid-related heart failure using a special imaging test. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. But without further ado, what the heck? What am I doing here?
This is Science for Humans with Dr. Jeff Gallini.
Dr. J, how you doing?
I had a new jig there for a minute.
Yeah, I have a new intro for you.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is a really good discussion. What do you think? Does fear really hinder performance?
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes, athletes, whether you're, a professional athlete or you just go into the gym to work out, it absolutely does. You know, but a lot of times I think athletes don't recognize it as fear. You know, when you look at from a psychological standpoint, psychology, fear is just an unpleasant emotion that's caused by the belief that someone or something dangerous is likely to cause you pain or threat. You know, that's usually what fear. But, when you're talking about sports, most athletes aren't afraid of the pain. Some of them are, or, there's nothing dangerous. What they're afraid of is failing.
Yes, embarrassment. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it is. So there's that whole different fear campaign that happens, to an athlete versus a normal person. You know, most normal people, I don't think, think about failing. You know, they're afraid of, flying or, gaining too much weight or, there's all kinds of different fears. Obviously, there's phobias and things. But, an athlete's fear, that's why I say can hinder their performance because, a fear will, first of all, keep you from even trying. I mean, how many people do you know that really wanted to go out for high school football, but they were afraid because they didn't think they were good enough because they were, going to fail?
You know, I actually lived this experience, and I have some strong feelings about it. The first time I ever pulled 405 pounds in a deadlift many, 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 many years ago, I was at a powerlifting competition. I had never pulled 405. There was 405 on a bar, and I walked up to it and got down, and I didn't intend to pull it. I just wanted to see if I could move it, and it came up further than I thought it would.
Wow.
And I didn't do anything else, but over the course of the following weeks, in my mind, I started to develop, or let's say I started to lose the lack of fear that if I tried to pull 405, I would be embarrassed because I wouldn't be able to get it up. I'd have to drop it. The crashing sound of the weights would attract all the attention. People would look at me. I'd look like a jerk. I realized that, I all of a sudden believed that I could do it. And I went into the gym and I did it. And I was so surprised. And I realized at that moment, the phenomenon you're talking about right now, the brain governs your strength output. And if you're afraid, not of hurting yourself, but what's going to happen if you get down in the hole with that bar on your back and you can't come up and you've got to drop it, that everybody's going to look at you, that's where you lose your strength.
You do. And, a lot of very young athletes, I remember when I was in seventh grade going out for football, I didn't even know what the different positions were. My dad never played football. We watched it on TV, but I just didn't quite understand, all the game. And when I got out there and got the pads on, I was a little fear of getting hurt, you know, hit. And, you know, okay, but what was I afraid of? That it was going to hurt? No, I was afraid of looking stupid, you know, because
right.
it really hurts. But, you know, again, it hinders you. But you said something which I want to touch on, is you have to realize how strong the brain is. The brain does not know the difference between reality and real. That's why so many things that are sold through marketing, you know, are reality. I mean, things that are sold, you know, people can be off in a fantasy world and their brain thinks that's real. And a lot of times, even people who are chronic liars, they believe their lie, that they could take a lie detector test and pass
yes.
because they believe.
Yes.
So I always tell athletes that, you know, what your mind can conceive and believe, you can achieve.
Right.
You know, and talking about powerlifting, I mean, that's a really good example because, you know, if you are thinking about opening with something and you don't think that you can get that up, I can guarantee you, you will not get it up.
Yes.
If you don't believe you can do it.
And in fact, we see this phenomenon. So every time someone in the powerlifting world breaks a record, more people break that record. So I'm back in the day, like the 800-pound bench press, mm-hmm. no one was, and then I think it was it Tommy Konos? I'm trying to think who it was that first benched 800 pounds, and then all of a sudden everybody was benching 800 pounds. So it's almost the fact that somebody else did it, you believe you can do it too because it's humanly possible that threshold falls. Look how fast they're running miles nowadays. Aren't they running like 4.5 minute miles now, some of these athletes?
Well, it's crazy. And, you know, you're talking about the bench. I remember back in the late 70s and, you know, really early 80s, the bench press world record was only like 570 pounds. And I remember I had benched 530. And, you know, my friends were telling me, man, you can go for the world record. And I really believed I could, you know, but then about 2 months later, somebody did like 600 and something, you know, which it moved the bar up. But again, it doesn't matter what your sport is. You know, if you're a runner and you're getting in the blocks, you know, and you're afraid of tripping, of, you know, not starting, if you're afraid of hitting a hurdle and falling, I mean, that's all fear, man. You've got to learn how to overcome that fear. But the other thing is fear doesn't just happen right at the moment. A lot of athletes
yes.
start fearing the day before.
Dude, when I was really lifting heavy, I would start worrying about leg day and back day the night before. I'd be getting ready for
really?
Bed, and I'd think, oh, man, tomorrow morning I got to get up and I squat. You know, really for me, once I got over 500 pounds in the squat, I started getting nervous. And it would, just as you said, it would start the night before. I think, man, I hope I don't hurt myself. I hope this goes okay. I hope I can do it. And I would start worrying about it the night before.
Well, and you know, what happens is now that fear turns into anxiety, which leads to stress. And we know what stress does on a body, you know. So again, it depletes you of all your vitamins. You're burning more calories. I mean, there's just so many things. And then it's not healthy. You know, now all of a sudden an athletic event is causing you to be anxious and stressed, which you then could have a heart attack just because you're fearful
yes.
of going into a meet or something, you know.
Yes. I call it chatter. So, and maybe you've experienced this. So when I would get under the bar, when I would start to get under the bar and I would think about pushing the bar up off the pins and walking back with it, it became very, very hard for me to quiet my mind because there was all this chatter going on in my mind. Some of it negative talk, some of it anxiety talk, some of it just like worry talk. But it was all going on in my mind, and it's very, very hard. And I really believe some of the best athletes in the world have the ability to quiet that chatter, to suppress it, to say, I'll worry about that stuff later. Right now, it's all about this one lift and that narrow ability to focus for even seconds, because that's all it takes is seconds to be able to quiet the mind, shut the chatter down.
And you have to. That is a technique. If you look at these thoroughbred racehorses, they experience the same thing in the chutes.
Yep.
They call that chatter. because the horses are squealing, you know, the gates are clanking, and those trainers have to get them to overcome that chatter. One of the things is they put those goggles on so they can only see ahead. They can't see side to side.
Right, blinders. Right.
Yeah, and then in some of the training, I mean, they hang tin cans and bells, you know, at those chutes so that the horse gets used to that chatter.
Dude.
And he can just concentrate.
I worked at Aqueduct. When they had a horse that was bad in the gate, first of all, when they're young, they don't even want to get in the gate. You got to, it's a fight to get them. They would get him in the gate. They would bring pots and pans out, start banging them while he was in the gate until he would jump and jump and jump. And then finally he'd run out of steam and he would just stop. And then they'd open the gate and let him walk out. So he learned that when he stopped freaking out, the gate would open.
So here's what I would do in the gate. Now, you know, we just happen to be talking about powerlifting. There's some different techniques for other sports. But for squat, you would always hear me make a noise because I would develop my own chatter. To get my mind off of people are watching me, I would focus on the bar, and I would take my contacts out, Carl.
Oh, how brilliant.
I did this in bodybuilding because I wasn't afraid to get on stage. I didn't want any distractions. When I got onto a stage, I took my contacts out. I'm nearsighted. I couldn't see nothing.
Right.
I could barely see the judges. But
everybody's blurry. Everybody's blurry.
They were blurry, and it was just me. It was just me, and I didn't even see anybody. Same thing with powerlifting. I would get under there. I couldn't really see. And I would start grunting and making noises. That's why a lot of lifters make noises, because that's kind of like developing your own chatter. Now all of a sudden, you know, you start getting yourself all fired up. I would always have somebody kind of give me a little hit or something, just again to take the focus. If you ever have like a cramp in your calf, if you take and just rub your knee, it takes your mind's focus off of that cramp and onto your knee, and that cramp will disappear. So by somebody just giving you a little slap on the back, I never had anybody whack me in the head or anything, just a little slap on the back, it would take my focus to the back, and then I would just think about going down and up and having fun with it.
Right.
You know, that's all I thought about. And if I failed, it didn't matter, you know, because I would never fail on the first one because, again, part of preparation is knowing your limitations. Now, when you get to that third lift, I always went above and beyond what I ever had done. But by then, my adrenaline is rolling, and, you know, again, I'm believing that I can do it. And that's part of the spirit of competition. Why, when somebody gets against somebody better than them, they usually will perform much better.
Uh-huh.
You take an athlete and you put someone who isn't as well, they usually don't do as well. But, again, if you're afraid of that guy, you know, in sport, there's always going to be somebody better than you. I'm sorry. You know, you should rise to the occasion and be excited to be able to see what you can do against that person. And, boy, you know, like people who used to guard Michael Jordan, and anyone who would say, well, I'm going to shut him down, they're stupid. They go, you know, I'm going to try to hold him to 50 points.
Right.
And if you could do that, you did a good job.
Right.
I'd fall out, you know.
That's funny. I want to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk more about strategies to help people eliminate the anxiety, eliminate the fear, and break through to the strength they truly possess. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
How to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Never before has an anti-estrogen
estrogen been so powerful? The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. So, let's talk about some strategies for people. I've actually worked on some of this myself back in the day when it was critical for me to be stronger than I am today. I'm getting older. I'm still very strong, but I just don't need to be keep pushing that envelope. And with that being said, I find that rituals, right?
Right.
Setting up the same way for the squat, setting up the same way for the deadlift, you know, like you said, you know, taking your contact lens out. If that's what you do it every single time. If you grunt and if you yell certain things, do it every single time. When you create rituals before your lift, you actually leverage previous successes mentally.
Yep. And that's really the key is the mind. I'm going to tell a quick story as I get into this. When I played basketball, there was a game, got fouled with zero timeout. We're down by one. I got 2 foul shots. They call timeout. Of course, I'm thinking about it. You know, I know the game is in my hand. I get out there, and I'm so nervous. I missed the first one. I missed the second one. Lost the game. Mm. And it was because of fear. You know, I was a pretty good foul shooter, and I should have at least made one, but I missed both. So I carried a basketball with me for 2 weeks everywhere I went. To school, I slept with it. And not only did I practice shooting foul shots, but at night I practiced in my brain, not missing shots, but making them. I replayed that whole scenario, but this time, swish, swish, swish. And about 3 weeks later, I was in that same situation, complete opposite, made both, was not nervous. Think about when you were in school, the people and the times that you would go in to take a test and you were all nervous is because you didn't prepare yourself. When I went in to take a test and I knew the material, I was laughing and joking. I wasn't nervous. The same way with an athletic event, you've got to prepare yourself. You've got to prepare yourself practice, but you've got to prepare it mentally. So this is where the rituals come in. You know, you've got to, if you're a basketball player, you know, you've got to see yourself putting on your shoes, tying them, putting your socks on, you know, adjusting your wristbands just right, just like game situation. And then going out, you know, dunking, you know, shooting the three-pointers, making it, winning the game. If you're a lifter, you know, you need to visualize, you know, okay, here I am, I'm putting my weight belt on, you know, I'm putting my gym clothes on, I'm going under the squat rack. You know, people are looking, people are watching, I'm yelling, I'm going down, I'm coming up. Over and over and over in your brain, you've got to practice that. I always used to practice my posing routines more in my brain than I did physically. Because if I knew what I was doing in my brain, I could do it. My body would react to it. The same way with powerlifting. I always knew exactly what I was going to start with, what my second lift was going to be, and probably what my third lift. But sometimes that would go up depending on the meet, you know. And every event, I would do the same way if it were football. You know, I would basically get in my room, put some music on, and I would think about it. I would see myself putting on my uniform, tying my cleats up. I would visualize plays and things that would happen. I would see myself making the tackle. And when you get out on the field, you're not afraid. Now, all of a sudden, the guy across from you is twice as big as you. So what? You know, I already know what the outcome is going to be because I visualized it.
Yeah. Visualization is very underestimated. And I'll give you this. So researchers have shown that people watching a horror movie, heart rate goes up, adrenaline goes up, all the same things happen physiologically that would happen if they were really in that scary situation. But they're not. They're sitting in a chair eating popcorn, but their body's reacting. So as you said before, the brain doesn't know the difference between reality and fantasy.
Right.
And when you are good at recreating a fantasy that has a positive impact on you, I don't care if it's just a 5% increase in strength.
Oh, yeah.
If you do that regularly, if you visualize those lifts that you're afraid of, at some point in time, you will become, for lack of better words, numb to the fear in your brain. You will bring that numbness to the lifting platform, and you will lift better. So what does it hurt to try? What does it hurt to try?
Look up Psycho Cybernetic.
Remember that book?
That is,
yeah.
That it used to be called visualization. When I was in college, you know, I played 1 year of basketball. I got recruited for two sports, and I wasn't quite ready to retire. But my foul shooting was about 67%, and some graduate student was doing a research project on Cyple Cybernetics, and they were looking for athletes to participate. So, of course, I thought, man, yeah, I'll do it. It's basketball season. And they wanted me to practice foul shots. And this is what I would do every night. I had to visualize being in a game situation, as I was saying, putting my socks on, you know, my shoes, exactly the way I would look, you know, if I wore wristbands, how would I adjust them? Being at the foul line, and I would shoot 10 foul shots every night, swish, 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 swish. In 30 days, my foul shooting went from 67% to 99%, and I did not practice in the gym anymore. That's all I did.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
That's amazing.
That's what taught me, you know, how strong the brain is, and from there on, you know, from college football, as I said, to powerlifting, to bodybuilding, to business. You know, if you visualize yourself being a failure, you're never going to try because you're afraid. I mean, if look at Thomas Edison. I mean, how many times he failed before he succeeded.
Yeah.
You know, they say that you normally fail 9 times before you succeed. But if you don't try, you don't know. Too many people look back on life and don't get into some sport or, you know, get into a bodybuilding meet or a powerlifting meet because they're afraid. And they always look back and go, man, I wonder if. You should never wonder if. The worst thing that can happen is that's just not your deal. But if you prepare yourself mentally and physically, you know what? You are a success. You have accomplished it because you've done something that most people have not overcome the fear to do.
You know what? And we should all be practicing visualization on a daily basis, even if it's for 10 minutes at a time. If you sit down in front of the TV for an hour a night and watch television, take 10 minutes of that time and visualize something you're working on. And visualize you successfully dealing with it, overcoming it, whatever it happens to be. It will absolutely prepare you.
And don't let people talk you out of things because that's the other fear factor is your friends. Carl, I remember when I first introduced Krealkin, people tried to talk me out of it. And for a fraction of time, a couple hours, a half a day, I was actually fearful of going out there. You know, you're going to look stupid. It isn't going to work. It's a fad. And I had to kick in my visualization and my sports training and say, no, you know what? It's not. I believe in this. I'm going to go out. And whether it's a success or not, it's something I believe in, and I'm going to do my best. Well, could you imagine if, you know, I would have just gave up because I was afraid?
Look at just think about the impact of that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So,
this is a great show. It's a great show.
Yeah, don't be afraid, folks. Go out there and give it a try. But again, be prepared. Be mentally and physically prepared for it. Don't try to go under a squat rack and squat 500 pounds if you can't squat the bar. You're not physically ready for that yet. So again, there's two parts to go to things. Being physically prepared, meaning you've practiced, you've done the work in the gym or on the field, and then you get mentally prepared. And guaranteed, you will find big changes in your output and your performance.
Great, 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 great advice. This is a great show. Great show. If you have questions for Dr. Jeff, go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ask the Scientist banner ad and send him your questions. Also, you can reach him on Facebook. Look for Dr. Jeff Galini, G-O-L-I-N-I. You've got some other Facebook pages now, too, right? You got the AAFX Facebook page.
EFX Sports. There's EFX Sports Show. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and all those things, you know. I always got cool pictures. And, of course, the Supplement Santa Christmas in September is coming up. So I just posted this morning. So you definitely want to follow me on Facebook to find out what the heck is Supplement Santa and Christmas in September all about.
Very, very cool. All right, Dr. J, so we'll see you next week, brother.
Take care, man. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right, we're going to have a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about amyloid in a different way than you've ever heard it discussed before. Not about your brain, about your heart. Stay tuned.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever
silver dime for your business.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Ketones are being called the fourth macronutrient because the body loves to use them for energy. Now you can leverage the hunger-fighting, mood-elevating effects of ketones with Keto OS. Take one package in the morning and don't eat again until you're hungry. You won't feel lethargic and you'll be alert and focused. Try Keto OS today. Go to superhumanradio.com, click the Keto OS banner ad to take advantage of the 5-day experience trial package. Leverage the power of ketones with Keto OS.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
The Category Killer just got upgraded in a big way. New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 is here. Take it before and after training and recover faster than with anabolic steroids. Visit Synthogen.com and use coupon code SHR15 for 15% off. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. So we've all talked about and heard about amyloid, especially in certain brain dysfunctions like Alzheimer's disease. But we're gonna talk about amyloid in a completely different context today with my next guest, Dr. Adam Castano, who is with the Division of Cardiology at the prestigious Columbia University in New York. How you doing, Dr. Castano?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. I wanted to do this show specifically because we get kind of locked into this idea that certain things, biological things that happen in the body, are sequestered to just this organ system or just this tissue type here. And if anything, we learn as time goes on. I remember doing my first show in 2007 when they discovered PSA in breast cancer tissue. It was like, oh, wait a minute, it's not prostate specific at all. You know, so, and, you know, so we hear about amyloid or amyloidosis in the discussion when we talk about Alzheimer's disease. I've never heard it discussed when it comes to the heart. Now, your group just published a study. Amyloid-related heart failure, now detectable with imaging tests. What led to this point? What questions needed to be answered that this study was required?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. Broadly speaking, you know, the disease amyloidosis is actually made up of several subtypes of diseases, and the disease we conventionally know about, you know, the one that most people know about in the brain, Alzheimer's, is a type of amyloidosis specific to the brain. And the type of amyloid that our group studies is specific to the heart. And what makes it specific to the heart is the type of protein that actually breaks apart and, causes these plaques or amyloid fibrils, if you will, that get caught up into the specific organ and eventually leads it to fail. So in the heart, the protein that breaks apart is called transthyretin. It's a different protein than the one that causes Alzheimer's in the brain. And anyway, so
is that because it's a, you say it's a different protein? Is it because it's a different part of the domain of amyloid protein?
Well, it's a different protein entirely to the protein that breaks apart and causes amyloid in the brain. So the process of protein breaking apart and causing plaques is that's what's called amyloidosis in general. So it's the same disease process; it's just different protein.
Okay.
And, you know, specific to this disease in the heart, it was, you know, it's previously thought to be a difficult disease to diagnose and a rare disease. And the gold standard for diagnosing it when you suspected it used to be endomyocardial biopsy, so actual taking a tissue of the heart and sending it off to the lab and looking at it under a microscope and doing a bunch of other sophisticated tests, which, as you can imagine, is an invasive procedure that may not always be appropriate in the older patient population who usually gets this disease.
Right.
And so there's this imaging test, you know, using bone isotopes that had been used in the 1970s. Many groups had discovered that it actually could potentially be used to detect amyloid non-invasively in the heart. But those studies, the initial studies in the 1970s, didn't show that it was a particularly good test, and that actually is because it preceded our ability to actually subtype amyloid in the heart into the two different subtypes, which is transthyretin and light chain. So there are two different types that majorly affect the heart. And this imaging test is only good for transthyretin in terms of its ability to detect it in the heart.
Is that the one that's most implicated in the pathological changes in the heart that lead to heart failure?
They both are, actually, both light chain and transthyretin. But for some reason, transthyretin is the only type that actually lights up with this imaging test.
Gotcha. Do they happen independent of each other, or if one is there, chances the other one is there, so we really only need to detect one?
Usually it's just one that's present. So the idea would be to, you know, diagnose the one that's there. As our technology for blood testing biopsy actually improved since the 70s, we've gotten much better at actually telling apart the two different subtypes, you know, without the imaging test.
Right.
And then our group, so what happened was our group looked at this imaging test again in a sort of a revival study in 2013, and that was the sort of study that showed that the bone isotope we use in the United States, pyrophosphate, could very accurately differentiate transthyretin from light chain amyloid. So that was sort of the background to this whole, the study that, we just performed. And that looked at a different question, which is, now that we've shown that this is a good test, a good imaging test, at a single center where patients have been referred, can other centers around the country that specialize in cardiac amyloidosis also replicate, you know, the diagnostic ability of this test? And can the test itself tell us any information about prognosis? So once you're diagnosed, can the degree of sort of uptake in the heart that we see tell us how severe the disease is?
So that's
the background.
So describe how this study was designed, please.
Sure. So there were three centers that participated, Columbia, the Mayo Clinic, and Boston University. And we had to combine all three centers because, as I mentioned, it's classically a sort of a rare disease. So we had to pool our patients to get enough sort of statistical power to make meaningful, you know, conclusions. So in total, we actually had about 229 patients, and from that population, we whittled down to 171 patients in whom we were confident about the diagnosis based on the prior gold standard of tissue biopsy. So 171 patients. 121 of those had transthyretin cardiac amyloidosis, and 50 did not have transthyretin cardiac amyloidosis. And so, you know, all of those patients had had what we call, you know, the technetium pyrophosphate imaging scan of their heart as part of their diagnostic workup using, you know, a protocol that we had published in 2013. And from that data, we basically matched up and said, okay, who's a true positive, who's a false positive, who's a true negative, who's a false negative, and looked and saw, you know, how accurate the test was. And from that data, we basically found that, you know, in multi-center analysis, the test was extremely accurate at detecting transthyretin cardiac amyloidosis. So, we call it sensitivity and specificity. The sensitivity of the test was 91%, and the specificity was 92%.
Wow.
So, yeah, very, very good test.
So do you think that now that you have a non-invasive way to identify this particular form of amyloidosis, we're going mm-hmm. to discover that a lot more people have it than we think had it before?
Yes, that's a good question. We do think that, and we're already seeing that in another study that we're performing, not related to this, where we're using the scan to screen at-risk patients with this disease, or suspected of having the disease. And I say that with the caveat, though, that there's still a blood test that needs to be sent in addition to the scan, to rule out the possibility of the other type of disease that I mentioned, light chain.
Right.
And the reason you have to rule that out in addition to the scan is because sometimes there can be false positive scans, and if you have a positive blood test for the other type of amyloid, that you need to know that because it can be treated with chemotherapy and potential stem cell transplant. So you don't want to miss out on that opportunity to treat the other type.
So, are there any other comorbidities that we see in this population that get the amyloidosis from the how do you pronounce it? Transthyretin. Do we see
right.
them having any other attributes of disease? Like, are they typically type 2 diabetic, insulin resistant, or anything like that?
Sure. Good. Yeah. So, because these patients are typically older, usually over 70 at the time of diagnosis, 70 years old, they have many of the diseases you'd expect to see in older adults with, heart problems. So they have, a lot of them have underlying coronary artery disease. A lot of them have valvular issues. So aortic stenosis, for example. A lot of them can have, for some reason, sometimes amyloid can cause, patients with amyloid in the heart can also have a history of carpal tunnel syndrome, and they've had multiple carpal tunnel surgeries in the past. Yeah, so it's
that's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
We know that a lot of these misfolded proteins can be traced back to dysfunction of the endoplasmic reticulum. We mm-hmm. see this in amyloidosis of the brain, in the cases of Alzheimer's disease. We also see it in the alpha-synuclein, which is another one of these plaques that is the result of misfolded proteins. And we know that the things that stress the endoplasmic reticulum the most are severe changes in blood sugar, especially episodes of severe hypoglycemia, impaired sleep for whatever reason. If you're having fragmented sleep, your endoplasmic reticulum starts to misfold proteins because of the stress. And we also know that there's some other things nutritionally that can cause endoplasmic reticulum stress. Do we suspect that this is the root cause of even this type of amyloidosis in the heart as well?
Yeah, these are great questions, and they basically highlight, a lot of the important research that's been done in amyloid in the brain. I can tell you that in the heart, it's a bit different in that, certainly people who have amyloidosis in the heart can have any of over 100 different mutations that have been described in the literature. And these can be inherited from, you know, one generation to the next. So you can be born with these mutations, and we can test for these mutations. That's one explanation, is that it's an inherited disease. The other explanation, or the other, if you don't have a mutation, there's a group of patients that just develop it with old age, and that's, I think, what your question touches on. Is we don't fully know the etiology of where. You know, what causes that? It may be something in the environment, something, you know, in the diet, you know, nutritionally, or something, you know, causing problems with the endoplasmic reticulum, as
right,
you suggest.
Right, right.
So it's still a hot area of research to understand exactly what causes it when it's not inherited from a mutation.
Okay. I want to take a break. I've got more questions. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Ketones are being called the fourth macronutrient because the body loves to use them for energy. Now you can leverage the hunger-fighting, mood-elevating effects of ketones with Keto OS. Take one package in the morning and don't eat again until you're hungry. You won't feel lethargic and you'll be alert and focused. Try Keto OS today. Go to superhumanradio.com, click the Keto OS banner ad to take advantage of the 5-day experience trial package. Leverage the power of ketones with Keto OS.
What do professional athletes such as Kobe Bryant and A-list celebrities such as Selma Hayek have in common? They are all touting the benefits of bone broth. But unless you have countless hours to cook every week or can hire your own personal chef, you're probably missing out on these critical nutrients. Osteobroth is a high-protein, standardized, consistent bone broth in a convenient powdered form. Use promo code SHR for 20% off at osteobroth.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today. 4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today. Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Adam Castano. That's Italian, right, Dr. Castano?
Actually, in my case, it's of Mexican origin. My dad's actually from Spain.
Oh, wow. Very, very cool. Yeah.
It's got a squiggly on the end, so it's Castano.
Castano. Okay. Yeah. So, anyway, I've read a lot on heart failure over the years because I am a firm believer of that. If you did everything right metabolically, that the reason for your demise someday would be your heart would stop because of mitochondrial disruption and failure and blah, blah, blah. And the mechanics of it would just, you just go in your sleep one night and your heart would just stop. And so I'm of the belief that, even in healthy people, especially in healthy people, this is probably why they will die. And with that being said, I've done a lot of research into heart failure. I've read a lot. I've read about therapeutic approaches, metabolic approaches, and so on. One of the things I found most astonishing was the role of physical activity and exercise, especially extreme exercise. I don't mean taking somebody who's a heart failure and pushing them into a full-blown heart attack, but gently pushing the threshold of the heart to work just a tiny bit harder progressively over the period of time. And we see pathological changes in the heart switch back to physiological changes. We see things like myopathies and hypertrophies actually changing and the heart becomes healthy over time. It doesn't happen overnight. And so, especially in the way that fibrotic tissue builds up in the heart from a pathological standpoint, and then excessive exercise will actually kind of, I've seen the cross sections of rat hearts. It's like the fibrotic tissue, it becomes healthy again. There's still a remnant of proof that it was there, but it's not the dysfunctional, non-functioning muscle any longer. So what do you think about exercise as a prophylactic in someone who is unfortunately, genetically predisposed or lifestyle predisposed to developing this amyloid fibrosis?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we can give a number of pills and therapies, designed to treat different aspects of heart failure. But in truth, a healthy heart is often, resulted from a really good exercise regimen. Exercise does a number of physiologic things to the body, and it's not just the heart, but all the other muscles in the body that promote cardiovascular health. Nitric oxide release, for example, that leads to systemic changes that are also very, very good for the heart. In addition to the sort of muscle training that results from exercise, and all of that combined can result in improvements in heart function in heart failure patients, and that's why cardiac PT, for example, so physical therapy after a heart attack, is so important and has shown tremendous benefit to patients after they have heart attacks or other types of heart failure, and it's all based on keeping exercise regimens as rigorous as they can be.
Yeah. And people have to be gentle about it, because if you are, for lack of better terms, crippled by a cardiac situation, it may just be that standing during the commercial breaks of TV shows that you like is the first step to activity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they say sitting is the new smoking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, people lead these incredibly sedentary lifestyles in the modern era where we're seated behind computer screens, you know, for upwards of 12, 16 hours a day sometimes.
And, right.
It's just the, you know, the very act of standing up every now and then or having alarm clocks to remind you to stand up and take a walk can be of benefit.
What about, so this is not necessarily pertinent to this study, but to the heart in general. There's a lot of interest in thymus and beta 4, especially after ischemia reperfusion of the heart. Thymus and beta 4 is a protein peptide produced by the thymus gland, which we know as people age, it atrophies and produces less and less of this. And it seems to have the ability to switch on and off certain gene sets that actually can heal the heart. I mean, I remember the first study I saw on thymus and beta 4. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, generally. The research is still sort of very premature. Generally I've heard of it.
I mean, I've seen a 2 milligram dose within 6 hours of a cardiac event. And then imaging of the heart 6 months later, no necrotic tissue, no evidence that there was ever a heart attack. This is remarkable. And it does the same thing with the brain, interestingly enough, especially since we're talking about amyloidosis in the heart, and it also happens in the brain. It seems to be an interesting combination there. And do you know anything about thymus and beta 4 on the forefront, the kind of research that might be being done? It sounds like a miracle rescue molecule for people who have had events.
Yeah, the general principle behind it is basically that if used after a heart attack, it may help reactivate sort of what we call these cardiac progenitor cells to form cardiac myocytes and repair damaged heart tissue. It's the preliminary literature suggested that that's sort of the proof of principle that's what it could be used to do therapeutically. In order to show that, though, we would need, you know, a very large sort of what we call randomized clinical trial with multi-center involvement to prove it in a large population of patients and measure, you know, an improvement in heart function or some other outcome to demonstrate that it actually works clinically and has clinical benefit. And that's the part that's, you know, we need to get to that stage.
Yeah.
In addition to showing safety, you know, it has to be safe first and then...
The research on safety is actually out there. So I read the full text on a paper where they actually gave humans everything from 2 milligrams to 1,400 milligrams a day for a number of days to show that it really has no negative side effects. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, that's reassuring.
Real quick, before we end the interview, what do you hope, especially clinicians, but lay people as well, take away from this research?
Yeah, I think number one, cardiac amyloidosis is probably more prevalent than we think. And now that it's easier to diagnose with a non-invasive test, we hope that we can actually capture patients earlier on in their disease course so that they're not diagnosed, in late stages of disease. And the test itself may actually help us prognosticate the severity of disease. And finally, in the next few years, we're hoping that there's a number of emerging therapies in clinical trials right now for this type of cardiac amyloidosis. And if these are approved by the FDA, then this diagnostic test may be of even more importance because there would be a drug to actually use to treat these patients with.
Very, very good stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Very good. Listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, my pleasure. No, thank you for the invitation.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Interesting. You know, I really wanted to do this show because, once again, you know, we think that amyloid plaque buildup, amyloidosis is just something that happens in the brain. It happens in other parts of the body. I predict that in the years to come, we'll find that it affects the kidneys or some other organ system. Just the way we're finding out things like proton pumps don't just occupy the lining of the stomach. They're in the heart, too. And that's why these proton pump inhibitors like Prilosec are actually causing people to have heart failure. And now we know that PPIs are associated with dementia. So probably in a few years, they're going to go, oh, wow, there's proton pumps in the brain, too. We think that when we discover, well, not us. I take that back. Pharmaceutical companies think that they discover a novel pathway that they can make a drug for. But they have to be cautious because what if that drug affects other systems? So the easy thing to do is to say, oh, no, no, this is just happens in the gut. And it turns out that it doesn't. It never does. The body is so sophisticated. It is so, what's the word I'm looking for? Elegant. It's so, I mean, 4.6 million years of development produced the most elegant species. And for us to think that it's so simple that we can make this drug and it just does that thing, that's just foolishness. Foolishness. Thanks to Dr. Jeff Galini. Check out Ask the Scientist at SupremeRadio.com. Ask him a question. Don't forget, he's Supplement Santa. Ask him for some samples. And we'll see everybody tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Thank you for being my audience today.